This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, producer Peyton, push that button.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
This is a crazy story that happened to Saul Spady yesterday morning. He went to a hole-in-the-wall brunch spot on Capitol Hill called Glow's. He loves it there. He goes there a lot. He is a fan of their Eggs Benedict in particular. In fact, he goes on and on and on about the Eggs Benedict. But yesterday, he wasn't actually seated. Yesterday, he wasn't allowed to eat there. He was, in fact, told by a host there, quote, "Your rhetoric against homeless people is dangerous for the community and you're not welcome here." He was denied service on the basis of his political opinion on how to attack the homelessness crisis here in Seattle. Saul is someone who is deeply committed to helping the homeless. He spends a good portion of the few hours he has to himself when he's not doing the show, when he's not working on the three other businesses that he runs. He spends it raising money and awareness for Mary's Place. He has a particular interest in helping families and children that are out on the streets living out there like dogs. He's trying to get them into shelter. He's trying to get them on the right path. He's trying to get them into safety. He's done more to positively help the community than the host at Glow's would ever actually do. But because of Saul Spady's political views on addressing homelessness, he gets kicked out of a restaurant, which, by the way, is illegal here in Seattle. So earlier this morning on his talk show, of course, he's on from 6 to 9 right here on AM 770 KTTH. He explained what happened.
"As the server told me, my rhetoric against homeless people is dangerous for the community. And well, Saul Spady, you're not welcome here. In short, I wasn't allowed to eat there and I had to take my business elsewhere. No one else at the establishment said anything. It didn't really surprise me. Ideological discrimination is a Seattle special. Stunned and not wanting to make a scene, I walked away. Luckily, I work here at this radio station, and they reached out to restaurant owner of Glow's, Julie Reisman, and she received and gave us this confirmation. Unfortunate situation. I had a server who is a person who spends a lot of time helping the homeless, especially around the neighborhood, and he was personally offended by an article Saul wrote. He took it upon himself to talk to Saul about it. Real quick, Julie, he took it upon himself to deny me service. He didn't engage in a conversation on homelessness. He didn't bring up the problem that we all see in our city or our different solutions."
Yeah, God forbid you actually talk to people with whom you might disagree with politically. I know that we don't like to do that in the Seattle region. Now, unlike a lot of progressive activists out there, conservatives do things a little bit differently. In fact, Saul isn't asking for a boycott. He's not ripping into Glow's. He's not calling out their intolerance in a way that's meant to do damage to the restaurant. In fact, quite the opposite. He does what Saul does, which is bring attention to a situation and try to bring people together. He's not going to stop going to Glow's. He's going to go there even more. He's pushing a boycott, not a boycott.
"And for those of you who are angry, for those of you who are like me, who are wounded and experiencing ideological discrimination that is very real, I have a challenge for you too. Take a deep breath. Please take Glow's owner Julie Reisman at her word, as I plan to do over the next week with Jason Rant. We're going to go in and we're going to have brunch. Give her classic Seattle breakfast spot a try, and then make your decision. If you're feeling up to the challenge, order my salmon eggs Benedict with all the fixings. Again, I apologize. With avocado and bacon, it's a little expensive. Be polite. Be sure to leave a tip on my behalf and mention our show and why you went in. Call me naive, and I'll be the first one to say it. But with a kind gesture and a deep breath, there is a chance we can start finding the solutions to the problems overwhelming our city and our region."
There's no one on KTTH radio, whether it's me or Saul or Michael or Rush or Ben or Mark or Guy Benson on overnights, there's no one on this station who's unwilling to talk with people with whom we disagree, because we understand that the only way we're able to fight these region-wide and really statewide and country-wide problems is talking with people who have different ideas than us. Now, we're usually, at least in this region, we're usually on the side that doesn't have a lot of support because we are surrounded by folks who are very progressive, and that's okay. They should be a part of this as much as we should. When we start celebrating the echo chamber that Seattle has become, that's when you're going to start to see even more problems. You've got a lot of issues right now in the city of Seattle that are spreading all across the region, not because of Saul, not because of me, not because our policies are failures. Our policies are prescriptions. They're not even given the time of day. We're seeing these failures as it relates to homelessness because we have a one-party rule system here in Seattle. Seattle likes to tout how tolerant it is, how inclusive it is, unless, of course, you happen to have a different opinion. This is a city that lives in an echo chamber by design. And as a result, stuff like this happens. Now, I give a lot of credit to GLOWS for jumping on this story and addressing Saul's concerns immediately. I spoke with Julianne. She's the one who runs GLOWS, who owns GLOWS. She said, this is a quote from my conversation with her yesterday, it's not our policy to tell customers that they can or cannot eat here based on what they think. It's not our policy. It's not our game. Now, I believe that. I don't blame her, nor do I blame the restaurant in any general sense. I blame the individual worker who did this, the intolerant, ideological bigot. Because if that's the way you treat people based solely on ideological differences, then you're an ideological bigot. You don't have tolerance for other people. Now, usually the pushback to that is, oh, why should we tolerate the hateful rhetoric coming from blah, blah, blah. Find me any hateful rhetoric coming from Saul. Find me, frankly, anything controversial coming from Saul Spady. I listen to him every single morning. He's a friend of mine. I read his work when it's up at KTTH.com. He's not a controversial person. He actually cares deeply about this community. Now, maybe he's got some ideas that this one individual host maybe disagrees with, but that's kind of on you. I celebrate actual diversity. Not just the kind that you look at, the kind that you can see, but the kind that matters the most. Ideological diversity. People who happen to have different thoughts than me and you. That's how we all grow, by listening to each other. And I'm sick and tired of living in a city that is becoming increasingly more intolerant simply because they disagree with you. And look what some folks are doing. We've been talking about it for a month because it's so incredibly important. You've got a bunch of people out there who want to pretend that there are literal Nazis roaming around Seattle. Who are those literal Nazis? Me. I'm the white nationalist Nazi, they said. They did that on Twitter for about 2 weeks. The gay Jew is the literal Nazi because I happen to be a conservative. Because I happen to hold conservative principles and believe that we're better served by them. I don't think I have the answers on everything, although as a talk show host, obviously I'm right, like 99.9% of the time, naturally. But I'm totally okay to hearing people who disagree with me. That is a sort of cornerstone of my career here. And that's what Saul's about as well. And that this happened to Saul in the city of Seattle, understand one thing. There's some people who are celebrating this morning. They like it. They want to rid Seattle of anyone who thinks a little bit differently. But again, understand something. We're in a position that we are in Seattle with homelessness and the opioid crisis and the traffic congestion and the housing issues. We're in this position, or I suppose we should say these positions, because people like Saul or people like me or people like Ben or people like Michael and Rush and Mark and Guy, it's because we're not actually at the table. Think about that for a second. Now, if you want to help me shine a spotlight on this issue, and I really, truly hope you do, text the keyword SPADY, S-P-A-D-Y, to 1-800-465-8770. Text SPADY to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to Saul's story. It's up right now at KTTH.com, not just for you to read, but for you to share absolutely everywhere. He's going to be on the show in studio at 5:30 this afternoon if you want to catch up on some a little bit of a deeper dive into exactly what's been going on. You're listening to the Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up that Instagram app. Search for the screen name Jason Rantz, all one word, J-S-O-N-R-A-N-T-Z. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
The future of Brexit and the Conservative Party even more precarious right now as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson sacked 21 MPs from his own party after they voted against his wishes on a no-deal Brexit. Now an election is going to take place, most likely. To help sort this all out is Fox News Radio's Simon Owen from London. Can you explain what happened yesterday and today?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly an extraordinary constitutional meltdown that is ongoing here. And the bottom line is, if it all seems a bit confusing over there, I promise it does here as well. And ultimately, no one knows what's coming next, because this really is uncharted territory for Britain's political system. You mentioned those 21 lawmakers who were fired, expelled from the ruling Conservative Party by the new Prime Minister here, Boris Johnson. Some of those are really household names in Britain who've been loyal Conservative Party members for decades. One of them is actually Winston Churchill's grandson, the grandson of Britain's wartime Prime Minister, and he is among those who've been caught up in this purge for defying Prime Minister Johnson's authority. But what it means is that Johnson is sort of partway through, it's going to run over a few days this, but he's partway through a landmark defeat, essentially, in his very first outing as Prime Minister, and on his central policy position. What lawmakers are in the process of blocking here is Johnson's insistence that Britain must leave the EU on time, which is at the end of next month. And the key thing here is that Johnson is saying it must happen even if a withdrawal agreement to cushion the departure has not been agreed. That's what put paid to Johnson's predecessor, Theresa May. She was unable to get Parliament's backing for her proposal for the withdrawal agreement. Johnson is saying, no more delays, time to get Brexit done next month. Well, there are lawmakers here, including these ones we saw in his own party, who are willing to stake and sacrifice their own political careers in order to avoid this so-called no-deal Brexit. So that's what's going on at the moment. It all comes down to this question of just how urgent is it to deliver the result of the 2016 referendum? Is it worth the risk of leaving without a divorce deal in place?
What's interesting in all of this is someone who, you know, doesn't follow this all that closely would probably say, okay, Boris Johnson is being incredibly stubborn. But to be fair to him, I mean, and I was there during the one debate that they had when he was trying to become prime minister. He's been taking this line the entire time, right? He hasn't really been budging off of this.
Yeah, I mean, he said throughout his leadership contest, and he was elected by members of the Conservative Party, not the country. That's the way British politics works. You can change Prime Minister without having a general election. And as he appealed to Conservative Party members, many of whom are very keen on getting out of the EU, and a number of them say at whatever cost, so they're fine with the potential bumpiness of a no-deal Brexit. So on the campaign trail, Johnson had this kind of soaring rhetoric that, yes, it was time to go. It's time to get out. No more delays. No more dithering. The difference is now he's in the job. He's in Parliament. And that sort of soaring language is now colliding with reality, which is a very stubborn Parliament. He no longer has a majority to count on, to support him. And there are lawmakers there, as we're seeing, who believe that a so-called no-deal Brexit is not in the country's interest. It's too much of a gamble with the British economy, they argue. And so they are defying him. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right. The language during his campaign was big and bold, but it was just language ultimately. And now it's running into major obstacles in Parliament.
So how risky is this call for elections?
Well, I mean, it's risky in the sense that he's putting his job on the line, and he's saying that, yeah, I mean, if he's defeated on this idea that he's not allowed to block, that he's not allowed to do a no-deal Brexit, if he's defeated, he's saying, let's have a general election, let's go back to the country, ask the British public yet again to vote on whether they think who the best prime minister is and whether Brexit should be done now or done more smoothly or whatever. So on the face of it, it is a huge gamble because he's putting his job on the line, and he's putting his tenure as Prime Minister on the line. At the same time, he also needs Parliament's backing, we think, to call an election. At the moment, he doesn't have that backing. So there is this kind of risk of drift at the minute where Johnson is not allowed to complete Brexit on time. He's potentially forced to go and ask the EU for a delay, and maybe the EU grants it, maybe it doesn't. But then you're looking at potentially a delay and the opposition party not agreeing to calling an election, and this could just sort of carry on for a while still to come. And we're 3 years and nearly 3 months into this saga now of Britain's long, long drawn out divorce.
So last question for you. What is right now, as we stand, what is a worst case scenario at the deadline of October 31st? And maybe more importantly, how is this going to impact my trip to London in November?
Well, I think that it all being well, the sun will rise on November 1st, whatever happens, and all being well, the country will continue to function. It depends on who you ask. If you're really pessimistic about a no-deal Brexit, they might even say there could be all sorts of infrastructure issues as well as the ties with Britain's very close partners in the EU are slashed. Now, optimists who say that a no-deal Brexit has to be done, it's time to crack on and get out of the EU, they say there's nothing to worry about, and they acknowledge that there might be short-term blips and hurdles and obstacles, but they insist it's worth it in the long run to get this divorce completed.
So actually, I do have one more quick question, because you're the one who's sort of looking at this on the ground and you're separating out all the politicking behind every position. What does your gut say? Is it somewhere in between if they go into this plan without a Brexit deal?
I mean, if the no-deal Brexit happens, I think ultimately, as I said, the sun will rise,
yeah,
and the country will continue. But that doesn't mean it won't be possibly hard for a lot of people. And you're looking at massive disruption potentially at borders. There's been talk of perhaps shortages of drugs for hospitals, certain food shortages. It's a big shift to do this overnight in one go. And so it's not the sort of thing that destroys the country, but it is the sort of thing that could be difficult for some people, at least in the short term.
Well, we'll be sticking around with you, Simon, through all of this. We've been talking with Fox News Radio, Simon Owen from London. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show, 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. This sort of story is incredibly important because, look, at the end of the day, the United Kingdom is a key ally of ours. And even more importantly, from an American perspective, this gives President Trump some tremendous leverage as we go to the table, come to the table with the UK over different trade deals. And so as Boris Johnson is a very, very key ally of President Trump, this could be very good for both the UK and the United States as they're dealing overseas with the Brexit situation and the European Union. So all this is incredibly important, although most important, as Peyton looks at me wondering why we're talking about this in such detail, I'm going to London again for Thanksgiving, because on Thanksgiving I go as far away from family as humanly possible, which is quite the opposite of most people, and I want to make sure I'm not stuck at the border for, 2 days. You're listening to the Jason Rancho.
From the Online Trading Academy studio, this is AM 770 KTTH.
Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. As we first reported last week, a crucial tool was turned back on for the King County Sheriff's deputies. It's called Lynx. It stands for Law Enforcement Information Exchange, and it's a tool used by law enforcement to essentially share data on suspects. There was a concern that it might have violated the county sanctuary policy. Sheriff Mitzi Johannik took it offline temporarily, and as of now, it's back up. She joins us to take us through the move. Sheriff, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, good to talk to you. I appreciate it, Jason.
So obviously it was a controversial move, from the way you talked about it, at least in an email or a letter to the council. It seems clear you reluctantly took Lynx down, but take us through what went into what essentially was a voluntary decision on your part.
So, one of the things, it's my responsibility to make sure that the sheriff's office policies, rules, and indeed that we follow those, as well as trying to make sure that we follow the law. And, we'd had that recent audit done, finding some outliers for us where we're outside of 25 reports that were outside of the ordinance by the auditor's estimation. And so I wanted to make sure that the tools we used were, in effect, going to work under the ordinance. And as you know, got to thinking about the Links database and what that might mean, and so I shut it down with the opportunity to get it back online as soon as possible.
So the intent was always to keep it off for as little time as possible.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not blind to the fact of what a great tool Links is. It has been for many, many years. For me, it was making sure that in the ordinance, especially under item number 4, that since this was a federal database that we were providing information on our arrest reports into, that we weren't violating the ordinance and that we were able to work closely with council staff and legal staff and get the assurance from the county council chair that it was not a violation of the ordinance as they sought.
And the possibility behind why it could have been a violation is ICE has access to Links, and it's not necessarily that any of your deputies ask or even record the citizenship status of any potential suspect or witness or anything. It's just simply that they had access to this material, and maybe it could be used in a way for enforcement of immigration law. Is that a general breakdown of your concern?
Yeah, that's a general good discussion on it. You know, all of the federal government agencies could have access to this. And again, you're right. We don't write down immigration status information. We don't ask it. It doesn't keep us from doing our job. But I feel it's my job to look out for the department. And while it was really inconvenient for my staff not to have access to Links for a period of time, we have assurances from the county council chair now.
So do you think
we're in compliance?
Do you think you effectively communicated the temporary status of it going offline? Because there are some who believe the intent was way different and that it's only temporary because you felt some of the pushback coming either from deputies from within or some media outlets as well.
No, I don't. I didn't feel any pushback. There's many decisions that I make that people push back on, not just this one. And I appreciate the concern that came from within the sheriff's office. I really do. What I could have done better and should have done better, Jason, and the apology I own to my own staff, which is that should have announced it to them before the, in effect, disconnecting us from that portal.
And do you think you could have also done a slightly different job, at least in the wording of it, just so that it was a little bit more clear that it was temporary? Because, look, the work I've done behind the scenes trying to track this story, it seemed, to me at least, it seemed clear that it was always temporary. But I suppose people who don't have that sort of context looking into it might wonder whether or not it's temporary.
Yeah, I could have. You know, I think the... You know, I was a letter of notice to the council that I sent to them. And, you know, I can always do a better job of communicating. And sure, should have been probably a little bit more proactive. But I was also concerned that if I didn't take action, that I would have left the organization in a bad place. And so I think in the long run, it ends up being a good learning opportunity for me. I'm always willing to learn new things and get better at what I do.
Just joining me, we're talking with Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknik. She took offline temporarily a law enforcement tool that shares data over concerns that it might violate King County's ordinance, making us a sanctuary county. It's now back up. It is now, it sounds like, Sheriff, that you are under no belief that anyone on that council will come back at any point in the history in the future saying, oh, we've got some serious concerns. You did all the work behind the scenes, correct? Everyone's on the same page?
I believe they are. So only time will tell. Council members change and politics change what council members or any politician does. So I'm hoping that we are all in agreement as mentioned in the council chair's statement, that this is all good moving forward.
Well, you know, on the council member's statement, you're talking about Councilmember Dembowski. He's also the chair of the King County Council. I was kind of taken aback by how quickly he responded to the action. And we generally don't hear from folks that quickly. How much do you think he knew about this before that statement went out? Because it kind of sounded almost like he was taken by surprise, but you had alerted him that this had happened.
He definitely, you know, he got a letter from me explaining what I was doing. But I was taken aback by a quick response that was so aggressive in, I thought were, actions that would be a positive thing with, my county council my colleagues, their elected officials, and trying to do the right thing right now to stop it until such time as we had all the legal basis. And I think his statement, indicated the latter. So, I do worry and think about, what could have happened if I didn't take action to make sure that everybody was in agreement about this database.
And so now that it appears everyone's on the same page, did you actually meet with the council members, or was this just meetings between the staff? How hands-on was everybody in this?
So this was, I was on some time away in Montana, mm-hmm. and so my staff was working diligently on this, but I was in touch with them. And so the staff of the council, the legal advisors to the council, and my staff had been meeting and going over this and came to the conclusion that we were talking about.
Do you trust the council's view on law enforcement? You know, in the city of Seattle, there's not necessarily a good relationship between the council and the SPD, and we've heard Chief Carmen Best call that out, at least individual examples, usually surrounding Shama Sawant. But from your perspective, is the council supportive or as supportive as they need to be of your department?
I think there are many members of the council who are very supportive of law enforcement and public safety. I am always getting good feedback from the council members about the great work that our members are doing. And so I feel that, and particularly in the rural areas, a lot of good care and love for our agency. The dynamics of King County are interesting at times, and I feel sorry for my colleague Chief Best in the battles that she has to work through. But I think that the county council is as supportive as, more supportive. Let's just put it that way.
Well, for a full rundown on everything that went into this decision, I've got the post up right now at ktth.com. For those of you who want to check it out, it gives you all the details, fact-based, over at ktth.com, as best as we can tell. We've been talking with Sheriff Mitzi Jo Hanknecht. Thank you so much for coming on, as always. Really do appreciate your willingness to be transparent on decisions like this, even when, by the way, we maybe disagree a time or two, probably more than a time or two, but I appreciate you always coming on to explain it.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. You are listening to The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll get to some political stuff in a second, but can I go off script for a second, Producer Peyton?
Don't you do that every day?
Okay, fair. You're not, everyone's supposed to think that this is a well-oiled machine.
Oh, sorry, it is.
So I'm going to a movie tonight. We're going to review on Friday, It Chapter 2. It, the first one, I was more scared of what I thought it was going to be versus what I felt when I actually saw it. I really liked the first It, and I just didn't find it particularly scary. This one, I'm finding scary for a different reason. It's 2 hours and 49 minutes. I'm sorry, that is absurd for any movie. Maybe you get a pass when we're doing certain types of war films, or I suppose Quentin Tarantino always gets that pass. But 2 hours and 49 minutes? There was a story earlier this week, and I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, might have been in the New York Times, basically saying that Americans and people in general have lost their sense of patience. That at one point in our history, we all were incredibly patient. My guess was that had to do with the fact that you had three television channels, no internet, and there wasn't really a lot to do other than go outside, enjoy the weather, play, blah, 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 spend time, God forbid, with your family. 2 hours and 49 minutes in a world in which I have access to literally the world on my phone is really, it's like what should be viewed as in dog years. It's like 10 and a half hours.
There's so many other things that I'd rather do with 2 hours and 49 minutes.
I don't even agree with that, right? Like, yes, clearly there's something else you can. It's Wednesday night. I don't have any plans otherwise. I would be at home. I would probably write a blog for tomorrow and maybe get a head start on some show prep, maybe watch some TV. But there's nothing on a Wednesday night. Average person isn't doing anything. 2 hours and 49 minutes, I'll happily do to a very good movie. I doubt It Chapter 2 is that good. But it's just, that's too long. They have to understand that we all have competing interests, right? I don't have to go to a movie because I can watch a soccer match right now if I wanted to. I could go to the park and enjoy. Like, there's all these other things I can do, including just in the realm of entertainment. And I get to choose it. The whole idea of being stuck in a movie theater for 2 hours and 49 minutes, and luckily when we go to these screenings, this is a media screening, so there's no previews. Coming Attractions adds an extra 20 to 30 minutes. That's too much. And I don't know the value. I don't know of people screaming for more time to sit in a movie. I hear people saying it's really expensive going to a movie. And the movies aren't particularly good anymore. They used to be a lot better back in the time where TV wasn't as good.
And my thing with movies is that everything just seems to be some sort of rewrite or nothing's original. Where's the original writing?
Of course not. You do another Shakespearean play given an update from 2019. You've got, in this case, It, which is based on a book that's the size of an encyclopedia. It's just, I'm with you on that. And every once in a while, you do get really good movies that are clever and different for the most part or evolve in a certain way, but no one really sees them. Booksmart is the best movie so far I've seen this year. Virtually no one saw it. It is you've never even heard of it,
nope.
Have you?
Nope.
I reviewed it here. I told everyone to go see it. It did nothing in the box office. Good Boys is another movie that is relatively small. It actually opened at number one, but at a time when there's just not a lot of movies out. And so it's not bringing in insane amounts of money. And at least that's an evolution of the genre.
And I wanted to go see that one.
It's just, that one's really good. You should go see it. But it's just like, I'm with you. Just, and then on top of that, it's a 2 hour and 49 minutes. Like, no. Now, weirdly, I guess we'll do this now. Netflix and Disney Plus are doing something that's incredibly annoying to me, although I suppose in a way it makes some business sense. Disney Plus is now offering their streaming services to compete with Netflix and Hulu and all those others. It's like $7 a month. It basically has all of the Disney titles up for streaming, but also things that they also have the rights to, like The Simpsons. Every single season will be on there. And in addition, they're doing what Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime are doing, which is they're creating their own original content. So the only way you can get one of the new Avengers series is going to this Disney streaming service. They're not allowing you to binge watch. They're just putting it out once a week as if it were a traditional TV show that you'd get every Friday or every Monday or whatever, and you have to wait an entire week. Now, part of that I understand because they're saying, hey, if the only reason you're coming to our service is to get access to this one particular new Marvel show, we want to keep you there as long as possible because these shows are expensive to produce. We're only charging you $7 a month. It's not a huge profit margin for us, so we're going to do it that way. In that regard, I understand it, but now Netflix is starting to do it. The Great British Baking Show, which is the best show ever made in the history of TV, outside of Veep, of course, is on Netflix. Previous seasons that were brand new to Netflix were just available, and I was able to binge watch. So they have a new season out right now. I think it's season number 7. And on Monday, during our day off, I said, you know what? I'm going to do nothing today. I'm just going to watch Netflix and chill, basically. But a different kind of Netflix and chill, the kind that is just really sad and alone. There was only one episode. And then I see a press release, Netflix saying that a lot of their new shows, they're only doing it that way. I want to be able to binge. I'm going to Netflix because they have a huge amount of content for me. I'm not only going there for one show. For a service like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime, I don't understand that business decision.
Yeah, you know, I go there for video on demand. I go there to get my fix and to binge watch. They're not allowing me to do that, and I'm not big on that.
Yeah, it drives me nuts, because you know what? As much as I like the excitement a little bit of, I used to do this with like 24 when it was popular on TV. Like, oh, you have to wait an entire week before you would get it. Okay, I got it. But you know what? I had time on Monday. I'm not going to necessarily have time this weekend to watch the next episode. Just what do you care? Just let me binge, man. Let me binge. And again, I know the longer it's drawn out, there's potentially more momentum and word of mouth. I get that. For Disney to do it, that makes sense. For Netflix to do it, I don't quite understand. And I hope Hulu doesn't do it. I hope Amazon Prime doesn't do it. That just, it takes away a key reason why I'm a subscriber to their content. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text and weigh in.